Did you know you can be a living liver donor? The American Liver Foundation reports there were 11,458 liver transplants in the U.S. in 2024, and 604 of those donations came from living donors. You're tuned to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to talk about what the procedure entails and what it's like to be a donor are Cincinnati Children's Surgical Director of Liver and Intestinal Transplantation, Dr. Alex Bondoc. Thanks for being here, Dr. Bondoc.
Thanks for having me, Lucy.
And we have Amanda Graham, a partial liver transplant living donor. Thank you for being here, Amanda.
I'm happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
Dr. Bondoc, what's involved in a living partial liver donation? What's the procedure like for the patient receiving the organ and for the donor?
Certainly. Obviously, unfortunately, when you mentioned that 11,000 people had liver transplants in this country, only a fraction of that are children. Probably somewhere between 500 and 600 are children who receive liver transplants. And even then, that ranges from less than 1 year of age all the way to 18 by the way it's pediatric liver transplant is defined. So unfortunately, these children undergo or suffer from inborn diseases usually that lead to end-stage liver disease, in which case the only way to cure that is to transplant their liver. And so the vast majority of these patients, probably 86% of these patients, are transplanted through what is called deceased donor organ liver transplant, meaning that unfortunately an individual suffers brain death, which is a legal death. And those individuals who have identified themselves as willing to donate organs, that's how organs are typically allocated. But as Graham will tell you, that some individuals, whether they be family or altruistic donors, step forward and are willing to, because of the amazing human body, are able to donate portions of their liver, oftentimes to smaller individuals. And so we have, on one hand, a recipient who has end-stage liver disease and needs their liver replaced. And then on the other hand, it's a supply and demand issue. And so when a person such as Ms. Graham steps forward, we literally create a semi-elective or an elective operative situation where you have two simultaneous operating rooms running, where myself and my partners will be in one room operating on the donor, and the other partners will be operating on the recipient. It's almost like landing two airplanes simultaneously in order to optimize the time. And so it's two major operations occurring simultaneously.
Wow. Amanda, what made you interested in being a donor?
Well, my best friend's son, Max, was 7 years old when he was diagnosed with liver cancer. And at that point, he was just treating the cancer. And 3 months into that process, my best friend, who's also named Amanda, found out that he was going to be eligible for a living or a deceased liver donor to have a transplant. And I had no idea at that point that you could be a living liver donor. I had known and heard about kidney throughout my life. You hear share your spare a lot. I see it on, you know, bumper stickers driving around town. And I didn't know that you could be a liver donor, but the second that Amanda said he could receive a living liver, I thought, take mine. Max, I had known his entire life. And the second that he had a need, it was, you know, he's basically my son as well. I have loved him since before he was born, and it was not a hesitation. And I know a lot of other friends and family members stepped forward to start the process as well.
Yeah. Well, and you found out you were a match for Max, but didn't end up giving him part of your liver. He got a liver through another source. You ended up doing this for someone who was a total stranger to you. Can you walk us through that process and how you got there?
Yeah, way, way back in the beginning when I called my mom, who was going to be my support person at the hospital so that my husband could stay home and take care of our family, she asked me, you know, what if it doesn't work out for Max? What if he gets a deceased donor first? What are you going to do then? And way back then, I just thought, I would help someone else. It's never been a hesitation in my mind. If I could go through the process, and it is a very rigorous testing process, and pass all of the steps, then I was going to help someone else.
Well, we're talking about living liver donation, what it entails and what it's like to be a donor. Do you have questions or comments? Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Dr. Bondoc, how many patients does Cincinnati Children's have who need liver transplants?
Currently, Lucy, there are 24 children waiting for life-saving organ and transplant. And that's usually about where we are at any given time. For example, now that we're hitting the end of the calendar year, we'll have transplanted, I think, either 20 or 21 children this year. And as you know, it's a rolling schedule where a new patient comes to us or a patient who's known to us is referred and undergoes an extensive workup process and then is listed for transplantation.
And for this procedure, you take part of the liver, obviously not somebody's whole liver, but I've read for adults it can be almost half a person's liver. How much do you need to take for this, for a pediatric transplant?
It's all size-based. The majority of patients we transplant, probably about a third of them are under the age of two. And so oftentimes, the way the liver is partitioned, we can take somewhere between 15 and 20% of an adult's liver to put into, to transplant into a child that size. So when you end up like that, there are, we do have other patients who are, you know, older children or adolescents who are listed for liver transplantation who can under, who may require more liver mass to sustain them.
Amanda, were you afraid at all about this? I mean, there are risks with any surgery. You mentioned there was an extensive workup to figure out if you were a viable candidate, but how did you decide to take this leap?
I did not have any fear going into the process. I didn't have any hesitation. I felt a lot of peace throughout the process. I am, I'm a religious person, so I leaned into my faith, but I also really trust the doctors and the process. They go through absolutely everything to make sure that you as the donor are going to be safe and fully recover, because nobody wants a bad outcome. Nobody wants a bad outcome on either side. So I didn't feel worried or concerned at any point in the process. If anything, I was eager and impatient to get to the OR.
Yeah. Well, because it took you, maybe I'm remembering this wrong, but I think I read about your situation that you got matched with several potential recipients before the little girl who eventually received part of your liver. Can you talk to us about that, those different kind of matches along the way, and then when you found out who would be getting your part of your liver?
Yes. It's definitely a roller coaster of emotions throughout the waiting process, because you're hoping to have a big surgery and that just feels counterproductive when you're a healthy person. I matched with Max in March. I got the official news at the beginning of March, end of February 2024. And he was blessed to receive a deceased donor liver because he was A1 status at the hospital before we could have my surgery date scheduled with him. So at that point, I decided to proceed altruistic and see if I could help another child. I matched with two other children waiting throughout the spring and summer last year. And on December 20th last year, Max passed away because his cancer came back. And a few hours later, I got a call that I had another match. And my family and I just knew this was going to be the child that I would end up donating to. And I did have surgery this year, March 7th, with a little girl named Sylvia. She was 9 months old at the time of surgery. And we were blessed and just in, I was amazed to be able to meet her right before our surgery. We were both at the hospital at the same time. I was about to go into the OR and they had just arrived. And my nurse came in and said, "Would you be interested in meeting your recipient? You know, we don't always have the opportunity to do this, but if both patients consent, then, you know, you're allowed to go and meet them." I got out of bed so fast. I was so excited to go and meet her. And I walked right next door and was able to meet her and her parents and share a moment. And I think it was really awesome for all of the hospital staff as well, who don't always get to see that you know, from both sides. Yeah.
Dr. Bondack, this is such a big commitment to be an organ donor, a partial living liver donor. I was talking with some friends about this yesterday, and one of them asked, do donors get compensated for this? I mean, people maybe lose time from work. There's, you know, this is a big commitment. It's a big surgery. Is there any compensation involved?
There isn't any compensation in the United States. There are compensation mechanisms in other countries, but the ethics behind living liver donation and the risk of coercion is sufficient enough that financial compensation is not part of the process in the U.S. What is done to protect the donor is that all the costs that are incurred by the donor are either covered by the recipient's insurance, or in the case of Cincinnati Children's, if there are other pieces that are perhaps not covered or go by the wayside, the institution will absorb those costs. Because again, as Mrs. Graham has alluded to, this, and you have yourself, Lucy, all the risk is on, you know, for this operation is for the donor. And there is no reason we're taking a part of that person's liver out for cancer, for infection. It's because that person is a good person, is a generous person, and wants to help someone else. So all that cost is defrayed. You know, the work, the time away from work is written off. We obviously will write coverage notes, those kinds of things.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Amanda, tell us what this procedure was like for you. I mean, I'm wondering, was there pain for you immediately after the surgery?
I am not going to lie, there was pain.
I would think so. I would be worried if you said there wasn't.
It is an incision from your sternum to your belly button. In my case, I call it a lifeline. I like the positive connotation instead of the words, you know, scar. I had a 10 and a half hour procedure to have my, I believe it was 31% is what I was told for my liver. And waking up, it is definitely a lot of pain, but as soon as you can get moving, your body starts healing. As soon as you are out of the OR, your body knows what to do and it starts healing. You just have to eat the right foods and be as active as you possibly can. And that helps. It's not an easy recovery process. I definitely did need the full 6 weeks that they tell you. I would say it even took me maybe 12 weeks to be fully back to myself because you're tired, your liver is regrowing. And I have heard other donors compare it to growing a baby. I've had two children myself, and that is a very similar comparison. You are very tired while you're healing and you do need to still be active, which is complicated, but it's definitely doable. I didn't ever feel like it wasn't something I wasn't going to fully recover from.
Yeah. Well, and you mentioned you have little kids. How tough was that to, I assume they're little, I'm sorry. They might be big kids, but you've got children. How tough was that to balance being a mom and, you know, your regular life while you were recovering from this?
Yes. At the time, my girls were 11 and 12, and I am a homeschool mom. I am with them all of the time. So it was very difficult to kind of adjust my life, but I am very lucky that I have a solid community of people. And that is one of the things that the hospital verifies as well. I believe it's the social workers. They want to make sure that you have a good community to help you out while you heal. My girls, you know, it goes back to Max. We love Max. And for them, it was going to be whatever sacrifices we needed to make. And when it ended up being for Sylvia, even though we didn't know who it was going to be, and even with the possibility of not meeting my recipient, because that is also a possibility when you're anonymous, we just wanted to help. And knowing that there's going to be some sacrifices involved in that, it didn't deter.
Yeah. Did you have to make any kind of changes in your own behaviors or diet or anything like that after your surgery, Amanda?
You are supposed to refrain from alcohol before you donate. I was sober pretty much the entire year, but especially in the last few months before surgery. I am a very healthy eater. I have a lot of salads. I make my own green juice at home. So Girls and I used to joke that my liver was going to be shiny and green when the doctors got to it.
can you say what's a green, Dr. Bondi?
It was not. Okay. You would not want a healthy liver to be green like that. Sylvia's liver was more unhealthy color, so I can't know. Ms. Graham's liver was pristine.
Well, pristine liver, that's quite a compliment.
I made a really strong goal to cut out any processed foods that I could and any sugars that I could. I figured, especially if it was going to a child, then, you know, the best that I could do.
Yeah. Dr. Bondoc, any surgery comes with risks. I mean, what are the risks for healthy people like Amanda who want to donate a portion of their livers?
Well, anytime you operate on the liver, I always like to tell my families the liver is like Walmart or Kroger. It serves all kinds of varied functions, and it actually has one of the highest inputs of blood flow every time your heart beats. So certainly when you have to extract a piece of liver, there's always a risk of bleeding because there are major vascular structures that take blood into the liver, and there's a major vascular structure that comes out. The problem with living donation is those structures have to be preserved, unlike if you're to remove a portion of the liver for a disease. It's not as strict as to how perfect those vessels have to be, because those vessels that come out of Ms. Graham then have to be sutured into a baby like Sylvia. So there's also the liver. One of the liver's other major functions is to make bile. And so when you cut through the liver, which can act like a giant sponge, there are small, tiny bile ducts you might not always see. So you can have a bile leak after surgery. You can have infections in the abdomen after surgery. And so those are typically the major risks, not to mention the risks of the surgery itself, the anesthetic. And to Mrs. Graham's point, that's exactly why she, you know, essentially lived as healthy as she could so that she would have as little risk going into that operation as possible.
Yeah. Did you have any of those complications, Amanda?
No, I didn't. I did not. And I also had my gallbladder removed during surgery, which I've heard isn't common for the left lobe. And recovering from that, apparently mine just looked sick. So they decided it was the better option to just go ahead and take it. I just got a little extra freebie.
There you go. It's like a coupon or something, right?
Yeah.
BOGO for the holiday season, I suppose.
Yeah. Well, Dr. Bondoc, we've talked about Sylvia, this little girl who received Amanda's generous donation. How's Sylvia doing these days?
She's doing really well. She was just seen by her primary hepatologist, Dr. Alex Mithke, who's my medical counterpart at Children's for the liver transplant program, and doing quite well. There are always risks for things to happen, because in order to receive that life-saving organ, those patients will have to be on lifelong immune suppression. And so there are always risks of that, but luckily she's doing very well.
Oh, that's great. Amanda, you mentioned that moment where you got to meet Sylvia before your surgery. Are you still in touch with her family?
I am. I actually just sent her family a box of clothes that I had made. I'm a seamstress, and I'm working on my girls' baby clothes quilts, and I could not cut into all of them. So we text regularly, and I love getting, you know, picture updates and seeing how much longer her hair's gotten or when she started to walk. It's been a blessing for my family to be able to see all of the good that has come out of, you know, the sacrifices and the pain.
It's almost like a bonus baby sister for your girls, huh?
Yes. And she has a big sister as well. So it's been great to see her girls and my girls. And we actually met them in September. My family went to visit and meet with her family. And it was just awe-inspiring. Yeah.
You know, we think of this time of year as a season of giving. You mentioned, Dr. Bondoc, the holidays and the BOGO situation that Amanda got. What would you say to people about the meaning of just the gift of organ donation?
I can only say that it's probably it's the most limited resource we have, but the impact that Mrs. Graham and other donors have, especially for children, what I tell people is we're not saving lives, we're saving lifetimes. Because now that Sylvia is doing well, she has her future well in front of her. And it's not just her future, it could be her future family's future. And so it's almost exponential. It's not even linear at this point, because of how, you know, the goodness of Mrs. Graham and other humans during this season will allow this little lady to do whatever she wants. And that's all we ever want for the patients we take care of at Children's.
How do you think of it, Amanda?
It's very similar. I feel very similar. I'm just so happy to see her grow and do whatever she's going to do in life. And with Max, it was literally the gift of time. After he got his transplant, his cancer was gone for several months and he was able to go home and go back to normal life and just experience things and work on the side of healing from a transplant. And we just got so much time that every single minute is very appreciated. Organ donation to me is just literally the gift of time.
Yeah. And Amanda, do you know, has your liver completely regenerated yet?
I don't know because I have not had a scan post-surgery, but I feel like I am back to myself and all of my blood tests that have been done post-op have all been shining and great.
That's great. Does it happen pretty quickly, Dr. Bonda?
It takes some time and it probably doesn't regenerate 100%. An adult's liver usually gets bigger, almost like a muscle, instead of completely regenerating, but there is some level of regeneration. During the evaluation process, we were very careful to calculate the volumes, as Amanda told you. She knew exactly what her percentage was because you can take up to about 80 to 85% of an adult's healthy liver out and they can survive on that.
Oh my gosh.
Would never get that close when we procure a liver from a living donor, but she'll hopefully have more than enough for the rest of her life, too.
Amazing. Well, I've been talking with Cincinnati Children's Surgical Director of Liver and Intestinal Transplantation, Dr. Alex Bondoc, and Amanda Graham, a partial liver transplant living donor. Thank you both so much for your time today. And you've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Harper Carlton. Technical director is Carlos Lopez Cornu. If you miss our program live, you can find Cincinnati Edition wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Lucy May. Thanks for listening.